Finally, it's happened. It's what the whole world has been waiting and praying for. Weeks of anxiety in the build-up followed by an agonising, tense wait for the final result. But we can breathe a sigh of relief. The fat ginger tyrant has been beaten. Yes, poor Scholes' Salford side was put to the sword at the Abbey on Tuesday night. UTAS understands Scholes will be filing multiple lawsuits in protest at United's victory, alleging fraud in the decision to award a penalty and the use of performance-enhancing drugs in a 38-year-old Wes Houlihan, who just would not stop running. I'm Julian Roberts, you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, and I'm joined by three esteemed guests to tell you, our cherished listeners, that as Cambridge United sits second in League Two after 11 games, it's officially time to stop the count. Let's go to the guests, starting with Chief Policymaker Owen Kiernan. How are you, mate?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a bright amber future.
Exactly, yeah. Head of Strategy, Tom Walker. See, I've made these nice little names for you all. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, very, very good. It's a great title as well. I'll take that all day long.
It's good, Head of Strategy. If you had one strategic decision to make for the current Cambridge United team, what would it be? If they were in such a panic that they went, right, Tom Walker, what do we need to do to secure a successful future for Cambridge United? What would you do?
Just head it and kick it.
And the department's tea lady, Jordan Warland. How are you,
mate? Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very well. I'm enjoying a really nice vanilla spiced chai latte. Got quite the repertoire with my teas and coffees. Multiple skills, and even in my role as head of teas and coffees, I'm still contributing more to the pod than Jack Swindlehurst is.
It's nice because it sort of feels like you've written that, Jordan, as a line to reply to that question. It's so well formulated. You're just so on it today. I'm looking forward to a good pod.
I know my teas.
You know your teas and your coffees, and no one can say anything else. So, since our last pod on the 18th of October, we've beaten Port Vale, Salford and Walsall. We've drawn with Bolton and we've lost just once in the league to Crawley. But before we look at the league, let's reflect on our first round FA Cup exit at the hands of Shrewsbury. We lost 2-0 yesterday at the time of recording on Saturday afternoon. Jordan, let's start with you. Ryan Johnson asked on Twitter, is it a good thing to be out of the FA Cup with fewer fixtures to distract from the league?
Well, some of you may have heard my feelings on this before, but naturally, I had expected us to compete in this tournament in addition to competing in the league. And I really expected a day out at Wembley with the semi-finals as a minimum in the cup competition to compensate for the fact that we won't be going to Wembley via the playoffs because we're going to steamroll the league and, yeah, win the title. I'm obviously very, very pissed off at the whole situation. I'm indifferent to the cup this season. You know, obviously it's a very busy schedule. October, I feel like there was a game every 5 minutes. So perhaps it's a good thing to maybe not have as many fixtures, although I don't know if the congestion would have been that big a deal with the FA Cup with the introduction of the fact that they're going to decide ties on the day, no replays. So really, realistically, we've maybe bought ourselves one or two weekends off. But maybe that's significant. You know, you look at the strength of the squad when people sort of pick up knocks. So maybe having one or two weekends off between here and Christmas and January, maybe that will benefit the team. I guess the other thing I would say is that 25 grand prize money becomes more significant given everything that is going on in the world of football at the moment and no crowds in and so forth. So it would have, yeah, I think those in charge, the board would definitely have liked the 25 grand. And I don't know, what I would say is it was quite irritating not to win yesterday. We hardly disgraced ourselves against a team from a higher league, but I don't know. It was encouraging to see us compete, but I don't know. I think I'm more disappointed with the not winning than the sort of the releasing ourselves from potential more fixtures for the rest of the season.
And this year, especially, I think. I mean, like you mentioned, you touched upon the money there, which is obviously like a really big point, a big factor, especially for the board. It's, I'm sure, what they'll be thinking about, a year where prize money for winning cup games will be more important than ever, like you say. But then there's the balance of the of the fixtures and having a more congested calendar already. Like you say, October was just ridiculous. So then there's that positive. I was thinking from a fan's perspective, Owen, do you think the Cup took on less significance because we wouldn't have been able to go to any good games anyway? So I wouldn't look forward to Shrewsbury at home, but I would maybe want to get through because the second round draw is a chance to draw Peterborough, etc. Third round draw, you get those special moments as fans. And obviously, like everything watching on TV, it's not as important. So does that sort of take a bit away from the Cup anyway?
Yeah, I think it does. With the exception of Peterborough, there's only kind of glamour draws when you're getting one of the big teams. And realistically, we're going to get thumped against a big side. You know, Cup upsets don't happen very often. We drew with Man United. Was probably our greatest cup day of the last 20 odd years, and it was a 0-0 draw. So it's hardly, you know, it was amazing to play Man U. It was amazing to see great players on the Abbey turf and also the Man United players. But it's just fun to it's fun to go, isn't it? That's why we look forward to these big cup draws. We like to go to Old Trafford. We like to go to the Emirates or to Anfield or anywhere like that. But you know, watching Cambridge lose to Man United on telly or lose to Spurs on telly is, I don't know. But then again, you know, cup upsets do happen. So
yeah, Owen, wash your mouth out, mate. No team is going to thump Cambridge United, mate. Have you not seen us play? We are literally terrific. No one's thumping this team.
I think you have a really good point because you think about, you mentioned the 0-0 draw there, but the replay was also one of my favourite ever Cambridge United games, and we lost 3-0. So the only, watching that on TV would have been, you'd be watching Cambridge United play at Old Trafford, but it's hardly anything, is it? But it's gone down as one of the best nights of my life because you know, Tom walked in as he saw Tom Elliott hitting the post, and it was, and I'll always remember his face.
Yeah, I don't remember enjoying the game actually all that much. It's you know, I spent five hours driving up there and 5 hours driving back to watch kind of 90 minutes of Cambridge get pretty much dominated by a second string Man United team.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about Man United as much as that game would be a pleasure to sit here and talk about. What I wanted to talk about was Shrewsbury yesterday. Tom, to bring a bit more negativity to the pod, because I think we're lacking it. Shrewsbury did come into the game yesterday having won none and scored just 3 in their last 5, sitting 22nd in League One. Do you have any genuine concerns from the game, or do you think there's definitely room to be critical about our performance?
Concerns in the game in terms of the actual performance in that specific game, probably not overall, really. The main one probably being that you could tell we were without Mullin and Ironside. You could tell there was a bit of a lack of a presence up front, and that obviously meant that I think at the back in the midfield we did okay and we actually competed very well, but when push comes to shove and it actually came to, you know, kind of a part of the pitch and sort of a part of the game where we actually needed to kind of impact it, we weren't really able to do it. And that's, I guess, one thing that I suppose is a concern, that if you're missing, you know, one or two players, that it also looks like a bit of a different team. But I think in the same way, if you take, you know, two goal scorers who are on track to score 20 plus each at the moment, you take out Digby, who's a really important part of that midfield. Obviously, Houlihan didn't play until, I think, the last 10 or 15 minutes. You know, Boateng, although played very well, still isn't fully fit. If you take those aspects and you apply that to any team, they're going to struggle. So I'll probably say that there wasn't any real overriding concern. I actually was pretty encouraged in many aspects of the way that we competed pretty well against the team, hopefully in the same division that we'll be looking to be in next season. And I think realistically, if we had the first choice team available, if Mullin and Ironside were both fit to play in that game and they did play, then I think we could be sat to talk about a pretty different scoreline. And we'd probably be talking about how brilliant the cup run is rather than how good it is to save the legs for those two sort of extra fixtures. But it is what it is. And obviously, I think like Jordan mentioned, you know, it's not overly disappointing. And obviously, you know, I talked about that this season of all seasons, the FA Cup it is probably games that we can do without. You know, ultimately it is about the cup runs. It is about, you know, those away games at Old Trafford, you know, even at this part of the competition, maybe away games at kind of smaller teams. And ultimately it's not something that we're going to be able to attend. You know, you look up and down the country yesterday and, you know, you see like Marine knocking out Colchester in front of no fans, and it does take away a little bit of that kind of shine. And ultimately, if we're missing out on that, it's not really a big deal. So I think it's one of those games where you sort of take the positives that there were from it and just sort of move on into obviously the next game and kind of hope that you can build on it.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is that Shrewsbury were really there for the taking. I said at the start, we didn't disgrace ourselves against a team in a higher division from us. And actually it was kind of, I don't know, a little bit disheartening that, you know, we weren't as ruthless in the first half as we had been so far in this season. I know the keeper made a couple of really good saves. The best one, I don't think he knew too much about. And had that been different, we would have gone in 1-0 or 2-0 up at halftime, like Tom says, completely different game, and we would have gone on to see it out. I have no doubts about that. Yeah, my concern is exactly what Tom was saying, that it was obvious that we were missing our three most influential players, two strikers who are on, you know, real purple patches at the moment and offer different things in terms of the formation. And also we were without our most creative player. Admittedly, he was on the bench, and I'm guessing he was being rested because he did 90 minutes on the Tuesday before. And, you know, big credit to Wes. I think that's his first 90 minutes in many a year. So I guess it's unlikely to crop up so often throughout the season to have all three unavailable. Potentially it might happen next weekend, unless Bonner's doing mind games. It sounded like we could be without Mullin and Ironside again. So yeah, I guess the concern for me isn't so much what we saw yesterday, but it's about how we deal with that should it happen again throughout the rest of the season, because we have got a small squad and, you know, we are stretching this squad, and maybe the answer is the formation and how we set up, and perhaps what we learned yesterday was if we don't have both Ironside and Mullin available, perhaps we don't play someone in the hole. Maybe we go up two up top and have more support there, because, you know, Nibs played really well yesterday, but it struggled to be that sort of lone striker, and perhaps that's why we're a little bit toothless. So there were concerns from yesterday, but they're not sort of, you know, I'm not giving up the promotion challenge based on those concerns. I just think it's something that we, you know, we need to sort of think about for the rest of the season about what we do if we don't have three players available. But like I said, surely the numbers of having all three unavailable to start is quite slim, or at least I hope, and God, I hope I haven't jinxed it by saying that.
Well, you probably have. I wanted to talk about creative players, because you mentioned Houlihan there. I wanted to actually talk about the man who started in his place, so to speak, which is Idris Elmazouni. It's only his second start of this second spell back at United. Is it really harsh to say that both those chances he hasn't been able to take and hasn't quite looked as sharp as he did the first time round?
I don't think that's harsh. I think that's probably fair. But at the same time, maybe we're judging him against sort of a level of performance which obviously was very high at the back end of last season, and maybe we're expecting it just slot straight back in and kind of hits those heights again, which maybe is harsh. But yeah, I felt yesterday, and I felt maybe in his previous sort of showings this season, that he seems to sort of get in the right areas. He seems to sort of do the very simple stuff sort of as you would expect, but the sort of player that he is and what he's been brought in to do, he's not really impacting games. I felt he contributed enough yesterday, kind of across his performance, to, you know, because obviously we are struggling. We are without those, you know, two key centre forwards. Houlihan obviously wasn't playing, and you do need people like Idris Elmazouni to step up. You know, I know he's young. I know he's not had that many minutes in professional football, but the sort of ability that we know he has, you really need him to be showing it in those circumstances. I just didn't feel it quite happened for him. It might maybe be the same thing, you know, maybe he needs to be playing behind an Ironside, behind a Mullin, who does have a bit more of a presence up front. Maybe it gives him opportunity to sort of find those pockets a little bit more, whereas, you know, Nibs obviously struggled against the back three, and it struggles to sort of create those opportunities for him. But I think it's fair to say that he's not quite hit the heights of what he did at the back end of last season. But you know, there's still a long way to go. He's not played that much football really yet, surprisingly, given the ability that he's got. And you know, we just sort of hope that obviously when he gets more games, he gets more time on the pitch, he'll start to show that again, because we know there's a player that kind of seeing the best of him.
I was just going to say, in his defence, he not only, he's coming back from an injury. Like, he left us like March time or whatever with an injury. So I wonder how much is around fitness and sharpness. I know there's quite a few people that are sort of a bit concerned about his performances. And I think against Shrewsbury, perhaps you could say he was guilty for giving the ball away or being caught in possession or loose passes. But I don't think he was the only one yesterday that is guilty of those offences. Maybe there's a question with Idris about where his best position is. Is it in the hole, or is it further wider out? So perhaps we've not seen him in his best role yet. I think the other thing as well with Idris, and it's been questioned on the message board, is are our expectations skewed because last year he was playing in a pretty shit Cambridge team, whereas now he's in a better team and he's maybe not shining because others around him are doing just as well.
And he's competing with Wes Hoolan for his... Sorry, go on, Owen.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's time to write Idris off just yet. He's, like you said, Jordan, he's come back from injury. He hasn't really played much football. And, you know, yeah, maybe he did look a bit better last season, but I don't know if his best position is out wide. It's, you know, who goes in the hole when Houlihan's not available? It's, you know, we don't really have anyone else there. The other attack-minded players we've got, Leon Davis, who, you know, I don't think he's ever played centrally, plays out wide. Tom Knowles again plays out wide. So, you know, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe we are trying to shoehorn him into a position that was not his best. I mean, we've seen Wes play out wide and not be quite as effective there as when he's in the hole. So maybe it's the opposite for Idris.
It's possible. And as we've said, he definitely has the quality. So hopefully, like I say, it's only his second start. So let's see where we go. But speaking of players making the most of their limited chances in the side, yesterday was just the second time we've seen Andy Dallas play at all this season. And when we put a call out for questions for this pod on Twitter, we seem to have sparked a little bit of a debate around him, one which I know that we've spoken about before. So Connor asks, what should we do with Dallas? He looks devoid of confidence yesterday. Maybe alone is the best option, especially with limited game time behind Ironside, Mullen and Nibsey. Sam, in response to that, said, I think Dallas did okay. When he and Knowles came in, we were more of a threat. So does Dallas need more opportunities off the bench? Let's go to the head of the Andy Dallas fan club, Owen Kiernan, to get his view. Owen, what do you think we should do with Andy Dallas?
What do we do with Andy Dallas? That's a really good question. I'd like to see him given more of a chance, but he can't. He's not going to get one. He's not going to get more of a chance this season. He's very much fourth choice striker. You know, Mullins on fire. Ironside's scoring for fun as well. Nibs is a great option. Do we let him go? I don't know. I mean, hopefully not. But there may come a time when we have injuries to those three ahead of him, and he can score goals. He scored a couple last season. I don't know. I don't know if anyone. I see Tom shaking his head there. He's the head of the not Andy Dallas fan club. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to judge him this season because we've seen what, like, 35 minutes worth of football out of him this season.
Maybe the question becomes, is there a reason we've only seen 35 minutes worth of football from Andy Dallas?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because he's on borrowed time, really, because his contract's up in the summer. Mm. And we need to really see something from him to justify extending that. I wonder, from a psychological point of view, how worried he is seeing, you know, Harvey Nibs getting a contract extension already. and maybe that's sort of playing on his mind. But yeah, I feel for Andy Dallas. Like Owen says, it's hard to see how he's going to get game time. As a fourth choice striker in a squad where quite often we don't play two strikers, we play, you know, what, like a number 10. It's very, very hard to see him get some game time. Hopefully he starts against Peterborough in the trophy game on Tuesday, but perhaps alone might be the best move for him. I'm always really conscious about writing off strikers because we've got such a tremendous history of letting strikers go who then go on to do better than when they were with us. But yeah, I feel like he's fighting against the clock a little bit, Andy Dallas.
Yeah. I think Julian touched on it a little bit just then. We've obviously not seen a lot of him. We can point to the amount of games he's played is obviously evidence of that, but there's quite a clear reason for that, I feel. He's either not ready yet or does not have the required level of ability to kind of contribute on a regular basis for us. This isn't something that the coaching staff just missing. It's not that they don't know he's there. You know, yesterday would have been the ideal opportunity maybe to start him. You know, we're talking a lot about there wasn't enough presence up front, there wasn't enough help for Nibs, certainly didn't allow Idris El Mazzouni to come into the game, and that's an obvious opportunity to kind of start another striker. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we're kind of trying out different things before doing that. I don't feel it's right that we kind of sit here and lay into him too much, because, like, you know, we say we haven't seen much of him, we haven't seen probably enough of him to kind of dedicate a lot of time to kind of, you know, slagging him off yet. But if you're looking for examples of what he has contributed when he's been on the pitch, I mean, there was a time yesterday where he got into a brilliant position at 1-0 down to put a cross in. He kind of struggled to lift the ball off the floor. And I'm watching that thing like, come on, like, you, if you realistically think that you deserve an opportunity, you've got to do better when those opportunities present themselves. A loan move seems obvious. I don't know what sort of level we'd be looking to loan him out to. I mean, there's probably not much we can do at the moment, given that I think sort of below the conference, maybe they're not even playing at the moment. So we can't get him a loan move now. It's going to have to wait until January, and then that'd be a Football League move when it comes. And are there many Football League clubs going to be in for him? Probably not. I think the obvious thing is just to try and manoeuvre the squad a little bit and try and bring in somebody for his position and maybe just kind of cut ties a little bit. I don't think he's been helped. If I'm kind of looking for, not excuses, but if I'm looking for reasons why it isn't working, he came down under Calderwood. I don't feel it was a transfer which was particularly well thought out. He scored against us in pre-season and we signed him on the back of that. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that that's why we signed him. We were crying out for a striker and here's one that presented themselves to us. And, if he genuinely was a player with brilliant potential, Rangers wouldn't have let him come to us that easily. It's that simple. So look, it's obviously not working for him at the moment. He's not getting the minutes, and he's not getting the minutes unfairly.
I question his build, and like, is he big enough? Is he strong enough to play League Two? And you talk about loaning him out to like the conference or other sort of levels of non-league, and again, it's going to be just as physical and tough for him there. I think his best performance for United was probably the Leicester pre-season friendly where he played up top with Jabbo. And maybe if Jabbo was fit last year, perhaps we would have seen more of him. And perhaps because we've got Joe Ironside, if Ironside's available and, you know, maybe Mullin and Nibs aren't, or even if they are, you might see him sort of come in that way. But personally, if it were me, I'd maybe keep him until March. So Kwezi has time to get fit whilst playing in the Indian League, and then get Kwezi back in March. I think that's probably the most sensible thing to do, especially because that will, you know, March will be, just as we're about to wrap up the title, might be a little bit difficult, get Kwezi in.
It could be a straight swap, couldn't it? It could be like a loan deal or something.
I think that'd be lovely, wouldn't it? But I think the sentiment's right that probably someone better might be needed in backup, because, you know, there are going to be times during this season where we don't have Mullin, we don't have Ironside, and I think if I'm Mark Bonner, I'm looking at the bench and that's kind of my option. With the greatest respect, I'm probably looking for something a bit better, especially if we've got, you know, realistic ambitions and sort of hopes of kind of maintaining the sort of level that we're at the league at the moment. But, you know, he's you know, John, you said the clock's against him. I'd maybe say in terms of his footballing career as a whole, he's probably on his side a little bit. You know, he's still very young, but he's obviously not got much longer left at Cambridge to kind of prove, you know, to kind of prove his worth for another contract. And maybe it's not something he wants. Maybe it might be easy for him to kind of go somewhere a little bit closer to home, because I appreciate that's probably not the easiest move ever either when you're, you know, 21, I think he was when he moved down, you know, sort of not getting many minutes. And then obviously there's a pandemic, and then obviously he's got to kind of get through that and try and force his way into the team without many minutes on the pitch. I think what I do question is what people kind of have kind of seen of him so far, because people are saying, you know, you can't write him off, you've not seen enough of him, but you can't say he's got potential, he's got this, he's got that, without seeing him either. And when we have seen him, it's just not been there. So I don't know. I think it's one where inevitably it sort of fizzles out a little bit, to be honest, and obviously does end up just leaving at the end of the season, maybe having been fourth choice, maybe not having too many minutes on the pitch. But if I'm looking at the positives as a fan, we're probably not going to see too much of him at the moment, because obviously we've got two strikers who are banging form, and obviously that means he's not going to get too many minutes on the pitch. But that's as much I want to say about Andy Dallas. He seems like a hard-working lad, and he seems like he fits in well around the place, and, you know, maybe there is place for him, but I just don't see it yet, to be honest.
This is it. Maybe you're right. I think maybe I'm looking at him a little bit with amber-tinted glasses. He is young. He has scored a couple of goals, and we've had much, much worse strikers than Andy Dallas. We've had some proper shit in our time, haven't we? Like, you know, I think we'll give him till January or something, see if we can get a move, you know, down to a conference for him, see if he can score some goals and come back. Because, you know, you never know. He might beef up a bit. He might find his shooting boots. You know, plenty of strikers have come here that haven't, you know, without great scoring records and gone on to be really quite good. And let's see.
But we all know we're going to get promoted. I don't think he's a League One player, so I think that might be a factor. And yeah, when I said the clock was against him, I meant from a Cambridge United perspective, because of his time with us and his contract.
Welcome back. Part two of Under the Abbey Stand. We've discussed the FA Cup run, we've discussed Andy Dallas, we've discussed Idris El Mazzouni, but now on to the real topic of the conversation. United currently sits second in League Two, 2 points off top. At the start of the season, Bonner's always said he would only be looking at the table after 10 matches. Now we're 11 games in, sitting second, just 2 points off top. Jordan, what do you think we've learned?
I think we've learned quite a lot. I think the biggest thing we've learned is to not follow the UTAS prediction for how Cambridge will do in the season. We were slightly wrong in our expectations of finishing 16th. I think the other big thing we've learned is that we're quite good at taking penalties. I guess two really important things that I've learned is that we have a very strong first 11, stronger than I perhaps expected it to be, and that first 11 can compete with the best teams in this league. We've got a couple of tactical options if we need to change things around, and that's mainly about going forward, about whether we play one up top or two. We've got options to change things, though I still think the squad is quite stretched. But ultimately, I think the biggest thing that I would say we've learned is that we have a manager and a coach who can read the game really well, can get his players to make subtle but highly effective changes within a game, and that can lead to really significant results. I say that thinking about the change in shape in the second half against Salford, which changed the match, changed the complete direction of that game. I'm thinking about the changes that were made at halftime against Port Vale, which again completely changed the direction of that game. And both those instances seen us go on to get really big, important results. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing we've learned, is that we've got a really good sort of coaching setup that are able to, yeah, to keep us competitive in games via being able to read it. And it's incredible. It was not something I was expecting. So fair play to Mark Bonner and the rest of the coaching staff.
You mentioned all of these clear positives that we can take from these first 11 games. Owen, I wondered if there were any areas that you thought could be improved.
Centre back is still a position that needs perhaps another option. We've, Cundy's looked really good, but has made errors. Darling's looked pretty good, but has made errors. Greg is Greg. I'd definitely like to see a maybe slightly more composed centre back come in. Midfield, we're looking okay. We're maybe a little light, but there is options there. You know, there's young players that we haven't really seen much this season. Knowles and Leon Davis haven't featured a huge amount, so there is kind of cover there. We've brought Boateng in now for the central midfield kind of cover spot. Mitov's played really well this season. You know, I think he's surprised all of us. We wasn't expecting him to maybe do as well as he's done. I don't think we're many kind of positions away from being able to really compete. And I think that's something that Tom mentioned, wasn't it, in the pre-season pod, was, you know, he said, and this is before we'd bought in Boateng, this is before, but before we'd kind of added a little bit to the squad, I think he said, like, we're only maybe one or two players away from being a side that can challenge. And, you know, perhaps it looks like we are challenging now. And, yeah, it's good to see.
Owen mentions sort of bodies and profiles that perhaps the team is missing, and I think he's spot on, and it'd be interesting to see what we do in January. For me, when it comes to sort of concerns or risks, I've seen a couple in sort of what you would describe as characteristics, and I think that's around kind of immaturity and naivety in defending. I see this in a couple of instances, mainly our defending of set pieces. We've been caught a couple of times ball watching. I'm thinking about the Salford and the Crawley game there. And also naivety in how we sort of react to when we give the ball away. And we seem to give the ball away a lot. And the worrying thing is that we've seen a couple of times this instances where we've done that and then we sort of stood off, and it's invited pressure and chances. And both those issues, you know, giving the ball away and our set piece defending, have resulted to us conceding goals and dropping points from winning positions. So what I would really love here onwards is to see us become far more ruthless and structured in those areas, because I think that if we could like iron out that, then we are really going to be a dominant team in this league. Like, we've shown that we can compete against the better teams. Going forward, we're probably one of the best attacking teams, which I don't think people would have expected at the start. So yeah, we've shown we can compete with the best. Now what we need to do for the next 30 games is look at the errors that we make and make sure that we don't, you know, continue to make them. And that is ultimately the difference between a team that finishes in the top three and a team that will finish in, say, you know, the top 12. So that's where I'd like to see us go.
I think we're maybe being a little bit harsh on us. I don't think we're being ambitious enough. I don't think we're taking what we've seen quite far enough, to be honest. I think we said and we repeated on a number of occasions that October was a huge month in terms of what it's going to teach us. And we've come out of that. We know for a fact now that we are one of the best teams in the league. It's objective. We're second. We make the most chances on a game-by-game basis. We've scored the most goals. We've got probably two of the best strikers in the league. We've got certainly two or three of the best midfielders in the league. When I look at Digby, when I look at Boateng, when I look at Houlihan. And I think defensively, you look at guys like Noyle, you look at guys like Iredale, who's coming through a little bit more now as well. I think we look pretty terrific all over the pitch. I think even in terms of centre-backs, really, I think we've looked okay. I think there have been times in games where we've maybe looked a little vulnerable. And if I'm looking for areas of improvement, I'm still picking at things like taking chances when we're 1-0 up. Crawley was a fantastic example of that. We were 1-0 up in the game, cruising, and really could have had another two or three goals sort of before half time, and we end up going in level, conceding just before the break, and by that time the game could have been out of sight. And then maybe the other one is just taking more care of the ball, which, to be fair, I think has improved pretty rapidly, really. Certainly from where it was at the beginning of the season, where we weren't sort of able to, you know, put our own impetus on games by really kind of dominating them ourselves. But I think overall it's just been really, really good. And I don't think there'd be too many arguments against that. I think, you know, like I said, I look at the personnel sort of across the pitch. But Jordan, you mentioned it as well about the way they've been managed at the moment. And I think what surprised me most and I'm most pleased about has been the way that Bonner has been able to impact games within games. So impact games sort of, you know, without making changes in personnel, we just changed, you know, little tactical things. Like the Salford game is a brilliant example of that, because we were struggling for long periods of that game against a pretty good outfit, really. And it seemed like he just changed little things about making sure people get closer to Ironside, who was playing up front on his own in that game. You know, Iredale at times was sort of playing almost alongside him. And it's these little tactical tweaks which have really changed games in our favour, which is making the difference at the moment between a team which picks up a point at home and a team which picks up 3 points at home. And to be fair, that's the difference. You know, Jordan, you mentioned that's the difference between a team that finishes in the top three and a team which finishes in the top 12. I think we finished 12th. We're well within our rights to be disappointed at the moment. But the top three, I think we've shown that we're good enough to at least compete for that, and certainly to finish in it. So I think we can look for areas of improvement, but ultimately we're always going to be picking, because it has just been objectively very good, and we know for a fact now that we can compete on a long-term basis.
It just goes to show what a huge transformation it's been in quite a short period of time, that, yeah, when we're saying what improvements do we want to see, you know, we're questioning, are we being negative by picking up on those sort of small bits? Compare that to, you know, 6-12 months ago, when you'd say, what areas do you want to improve? And we could spend a whole hour of a pod going through it. You know, I don't think it's necessarily about being negative or critical on the team. It's about, you know, changing that mindset now and being like, do you know what, let's be ruthless and let's think like a team that is second in the league. And a team that's second in the league is the kind of team that wants to, you know, continuously get better. And it's about, you know, spotting where there are weaknesses and small mistakes and making sure it doesn't happen. And Mark Bonner completely strikes me as the kind of coach who is already thinking that, probably thinking that, you know, 12 weeks ago. He said something after the Salford game about, we're involved in a relentless pursuit of points. And it was just a fantastic thing to hear, a fantastic quote to hear. And yeah, I don't want it to sound negative, me sort of picking up on, you know, some errors in defending or errors in sort of standing off teams. I just think it's now a representation of where we've come as a team, where we're looking to hone in on areas where we can make sure that we completely kill off games and kill off opponents, which, you know, is not a conversation I thought we would be having, you know, 11 games into the season. I thought we would be struggling this year, and we've completely turned it round. And yeah, like Thomas said, we've proven that really we are one of the top teams in this division. We, you know, our opening 11 games and the results we've got, we've played a lot of the teams that are in the sort of top 12. We've played your Port Vales and your Salfords and your Walsalls, who were fancied, and Newport, who were a top, and we beat them. And, you know, so we've played these fancy teams. We've got another one in a couple of weeks' time, Cheltenham away. I'm really confident going into that game that, you know, that even if we don't maybe get the result, we'll still perform well, because that is this massive sort of culture change that's happened at the club. You know, we're winners now, and that's a really, really sort of big sort of change that's gone on. And you know, fair play to Bonner and everyone else on the coaching side that has got us into that position.
I wonder if it helps that Bonner seems to be, anyway, kind of say close with the players. You know, he's close to them in age, certainly a lot closer than Calderwood was. He's kind of maybe a little bit more adaptable. I always saw Calderwood as someone who was very rigid manager. He'd had his success before with, I think, Northampton and maybe Forest, I think, as well. And he kind of stuck to that game plan. He's like, oh, this has been successful in the past. This is what's going to work again. Whereas, you know, Bonner's shown that he's not afraid to switch things up. He's not afraid to change players' positions. He's not afraid to drop people if he needs to change tactics. And, you know, from what I can see, and it's a little bit difficult as an outsider, but, you know, there does seem to be a good kind of buzz around the club at the moment, a good kind of buzz in the dressing room. And one of the things we've seen mentioned is like an intolerance of dickheads, basically. But Bonner strikes me as the kind of person that won't put up with much shit. And we've had we've had some players in the past that maybe have been maybe disruptive around the dressing room, and maybe not taking things quite so serious. They're kind of here to pick up their paycheck, and yeah, to me, Bonner doesn't sound like someone who's going to tolerate that. He wants winners there, and you can see that when, you know, when he's bringing players on. The players that aren't making starting 11 are kind of coming on, and they are, you know, they're wanting to play, they're wanting to be in the starting 11 next week. And, you know, all credit to him for that. You know, we don't see heads drop under, you know, under Calderwood, especially. Concede a goal, oof, that's it, heads down, and, you know, everyone's kind of done. You think, right, we're going to concede two or three more. You know, when we do have the ball in defence, you know, we've been playing the ball out from the back. I've mentioned it before. You know, we're playing nice football. We're playing really attractive football. And I was speaking to my dad about this on the phone the other day, and he was saying, you know, there'd be in the past where you'd see Cambridge have the ball in the back and just think, oh, Christ, you know, just waiting for someone to nick it off them or to make a mistake or to give the ball away. Whereas at the moment, I kind of, you know, I see someone on the ball making a pass with, you know, across the area or kind of close in their own half, and I don't have that fear anymore. It's nice to think, actually, you know what, Cambridge United are pretty decent, they're playing good football, and they're going to go up.
So, Jordan, how significant do you think the Salford result was?
Thanks for asking, Julian. I would say it was a hugely significant result, especially against a very, very good team, and a team that was tipped by a lot of people, ourselves included, as favourites for the title. Having seen them play, I would still back them for promotion. I know they were without a proper sort of full-time manager when we played them, and I think they've hired the lad from Swindon, but someone could fact check that for me. So yeah, it was hugely significant getting that win, and I guess it kind of is a little bit reminiscent of that glorious Tuesday night away victory in the promotion season away to Grimsby. It had that kind of sort of significance. If I'm honest, I think there's actually been a slightly more significant result in the last sort of five or six games since we did a podcast. And I would say that was Walsall away. Obviously, Walsall are a good team. Attacking options are plenty. They were on this really good sort of run of unbeaten games. I think it was something like 15 or something like that games. So they were going in with some form, but I think it was really significant for us because that was the first game over the last couple of weeks that we went into that game with key players missing. It was the first game without our linchpin in midfield, the digger, being available. And as a game, there was just so many sort of changes to positions, and the whole squad as a whole just stepped up and got this really, really impressive away win. It was ugly at times, but it was very efficient. We were very defensive. We soaked up a lot of pressure and chased everything. And then we just attacked superbly when opportunities arose. So, yeah, I think the Salford game was obviously really significant because of who it was that we played and their sort of likelihood to be promoted. Ditto against Port Vale, but for me there was something extra about that Walsall result which really sort of I think might prove to be quite significant over the season.
Yeah, I'll probably go along with that, to be fair, and I think the way that we sort of comfortably just dispatched them was quite reassuring as well. And you know, we can look to almost every single game within October and say that was the most significant result for this reason, and this one was for this reason. I'd probably look at Port Vale as well, just because for me, they're a team who are really,
they were good,
really going to be up there. Yeah, they look like a really good team.
They press so well.
Yeah, and it's another one where we've been through moments within that game where we were up against it and we were struggling. You know, I seem to recall a couple of times where their striker got in behind. I think their goal on that evening came from a penalty, which came from that. And it was one where it was really backs against the wall, certainly once we went 2-1 up, which came from a brilliant move. And it combined sort of five of the players who have really kind of, or four or five of the players who have really kind of embodied what we've done so far. And I think it was Iredale to Houlihan to Boateng to Dunk Mullin, who obviously ultimately scored. And that's, I think, what's been so pleasing. It's that throughout this sort of run of games that we've been on, it's been like, okay, that's a brilliant, significant result. But look who's coming up next. They're going to be a really tough game, and we've got to beat them as well. And that's the sign of a team that wins promotion. You know, that regardless of what comes up against them, they've got the tools to be able to kind of navigate it. And interestingly, probably more interestingly, really, is that if you look at the fixtures that we've actually got coming up, you know, we obviously alluded to Cheltenham, which is of course a tough game against another team who are expected to be up there, but before that, we've got Barrow and Southend. So we're now actually approaching a run of games where realistically, it's probably the first time this season where we're actually expected to take points, and the onus is on us to actually go out and win those games rather than it being a case of, well, let's see how we get on against a team who are expected to be up there. We're now playing against teams who we expect to be battling against the drop, or if you look at Southend, destined to go down bottom of the league. And really, the onus is on us to go and really assert ourselves on those games. And obviously, we've talked about, you know, missing Ironside and Mullin. We'll see if they're back. Bonner didn't sound that confident in his post-match that they would be. And it's a different type of challenge, but one that I think if we can sort of overcome it, then you look at the rest of the season and think there's a real chance here. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of the games we've had, it's just been so enjoyable just to see us scoring so many goals, creating so many chances. I think what you look for in a way is areas that this would slow down, you know, reasons that this would not be sustainable, and that's usually in terms of chances created. You know, that we're either sort of outperforming our XG, if you like, or we're just being super clinical, which of course we are, but we're also creating a lot of chances, and that means that probably this isn't that there's no reason that this should stop. And that's why I say, you know, we should have ambitions of kind of continuing where, you know, with kind of where we're at, and hopefully, November will be another big month. We'll be sat here in December talking about December being a big month, and then, you know, by January we'll probably have the league racked up. So, all good.
You talked about being clinical. I guess the one game that we weren't, even though we had lots and lots of chances and opportunities recently, was the defeat away to Crawley. And that was just such a peculiar one, because again, it was that situation that we're talking about where we played a game against a team and then we're like, oh, right, well, now we've got another one. If we beat them, we're contenders, and so on and so forth. And you could maybe be disheartened losing one of those games, you know, losing to Crawley, who were on a good run. But actually, we just played really, really well. I think we played better against Crawley and lost than we did against, say, Salford and even parts of the Port Vale game. So yeah, it's really something that there's so much in this squad to sort of bounce back from a disappointing result and then go beat the title favourites in Salford.
Yeah, I mean, Crawley looked good, but you know, they look like a decent side. They've been unbeaten at home for ages, for about a year, I think, and we come really close to ending that record. You know, we did really well. There's been times, certainly last season, when, you know, you watch United lose and they didn't play well at all, and you come out in, I'm thinking Stevenage last season, where they absolutely battered us at home, they could barely buy a win all year, and you come out thinking, you know what, that was crap, like they didn't play well at all. But when you play really well and still lose, yeah, it's disappointing, but it's better than seeing Crawley absolutely batter us. It's better than, you know, it's better than, say, Salford or Walsall beating us. Their games last year, we almost certainly would have lost or got a point from. So I'm not too disheartened. You know, you lose, you play well. I think the Crawley game, take nothing away from him, but we were unlucky. We were unlucky in that game. We mentioned it a little bit in the match report. You know, we hit the bar twice. We perhaps should have had certainly one, if not two, penalties. On another day, that could have been another kind of 5-5-0 win for United, but it wasn't. And we've got to deal with that. You know, we're not going to win every single game this season, no matter how great Bonner is, no matter how great Houlihan is. We're going to lose games this year. And to lose them in that manner is better than getting dicked by someone.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point as well. And there's sort of ways to lose games. You know, there's you know, manners in which defeat is always acceptable, and obviously manners where it's not acceptable. You know, you obviously mentioned the sort of Stevenage game from last season, which is at one extreme of that, and probably the Crawley game is kind of right at the other. But sort of within this season, you know, there's already examples of that. I think the Exeter game was probably the most negative that we've been about us so far. And then you look at Crawley, and I don't have the figures in front of me, but the sort of XG sort of statistics from that game were that we limited Crawley to very little. I think just under one goal, or just under one expected goal, I should say, and for ourselves in terms of the chances we were able to carve out, based on the chances we created, you probably would have expected about three goals. So it's just one of those where it doesn't quite happen for you, but again, you just take the positives of what was a pretty decent display. There were a couple of things, you know, the goal that led to the winner, you know, it obviously came from a set piece. The first goal was, you know, put your hands up, it's a very good piece of play from a decent attacking outfit. But otherwise, you know, even in the sort of negative moments of the month, we're looking at it and saying, well, this is probably a lot better than what we produced for maybe the last 5 years. And that's kind of where we're at the moment. So yeah, positives even in defeat, in you know, rare defeats. And yeah, we roll on and obviously hope that it continues and we can kind of continue with where we're at.
What about Jack Iredale? Should we speak about him for a minute? How good's he been, George?
I'd like to start my Jack Iredale speech with an apology to another Jack. Jack Swindlehurst, who's not with us this afternoon because he's sulking because I said that he's no longer my favourite person that's moved from Carlisle to Cambridge. That person is now Jack Iredale. So sorry, Swindle. We can still find room in our hearts for you somewhere. Probably not as host. We've got Julian for that. He's better. But anyway, back to the important question, Jack Iredale. Yeah, he's really turning out to be quite some player, isn't he? He's got great pace. He's really good at being able to sort of dribble and carry the ball forward. He's good on the ball. His work rate is excellent. And yeah, it's really, really exciting to see that versatility on the left-hand side with him and Dunk being able to sort of either play winger or fullback and swap between them. I don't think he was that impactful when he played on the right against Shrewsbury yesterday, but I mean, it's an experiment, so I'll let it off. But yeah, he's turning out to be a really shrewd piece of business.
It's never a glamour signing, is it, a left back? Short of Roberto Carlos coming out of retirement to sign for us, it's, you know, I think you mentioned, Julian, that no one was that excited by Jack Iredale signing. I think we kind of spoke about him on the pod. We didn't know a huge amount about him, but you know, when during the season preview, and it was just one of those like, yeah, we'll see how he does. If he does all right, he does all right. You know, who'd we have there last season? Jake Carroll. Yeah, he's tons better than Jake Carroll already. He's looking great. He's really attacking minded, which complements Kyle Noyle in a way. I think, you know, when you sign a left back, you maybe don't quite expect him to be like that. But for I think probably half the games he's played for us, he's actually played on that left wing, and Dunk's stayed back, and it's nice, if not unusual. It's unusual to see two players on the same side swapping position back and forward, left back and left midfield. You know, you quite often see right midfield and left midfield swap over, and you know, Hannan's done that a couple of times this season with Dunk. But yeah, to see it must make things really difficult for kind of opposition teams when they come here, and you know, they do their team talk, and the manager's like, right, you're up against Jack Iredale in defence, he's the left back, but no, you've got Harrison Dunk instead, and he's bombing down the wing, and Iredale's further forward, and they mix it up, and they don't seem to. Neither one of them seems to be weaker in the other position, if you get what I mean. When you often get players change up, you can kind of see, yeah, that's his natural position. But both of them are great in each other's position, which is really nice to see.
You speaking of midfield there, Owen, we had a question from Omulo on Twitter who says, what would you say is our best midfield since Liam O'Neill and Paul Digby are both out for a while? I think he's talking specifically about central midfield, but we can widen it out to the whole four. I'll leave that open to the audience.
I don't think we've really got many options, have we? If you're not counting O'Neill and Digby, it's Boateng and May, basically. Boateng and May. I've been listening to Doug and Johnny too long, really. Boateng and May, I think, are really the only midfield options. I know we've got Simper at St Neots, who's quite highly regarded by the club, but we haven't seen anything of him this season, and we're probably not going to, really. My personal favourite midfield, I suppose, would be... It's really tough, because if I'm going four across the middle, I'd go Dunk on the left. I'd say Boateng and May in the middle there, and Hannon on the right. But that doesn't fit in Wes Houlihan. So yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question, you know, what is our best midfield? The answer sits with what are you going to play up? Like, how are you going to play going forward? Are you going to play Mullin with someone behind him, or you're going to play Mullin and Ironside as a two? Yeah. For me personally, although Joe Ironside has done a fantastic job so far this season, better than what I was expecting, perhaps, I would still say if Wes Houlihan is fit to start, Wes Houlihan starts. So you play five in midfield. So for me, I think the best midfield we have at the moment with the digger out would be Adam May playing that sort of deeper role. I know his mistake led to the goal yesterday, but I think it's important to say that I think I've seen improvement in Adam May. I've seen him sort of improving over the last few games. He can play deeper, and he sort of plays that kind of sort of, the role that Maris tried to play last year, that sort of deeper lying ball player. And I think it's better having him there, because it allows Boateng to be more attacking and come forward. I know Boateng can play defensive. We saw it against Crawley, and Hannant played in the centre, but as well as Hannant did against Crawley in the centre of midfield, I think his best position is wide. So for me, yeah, I would agree with what Owen said, that your best midfield is Dunk, Hannant, May, Boateng. And then for me, I'd play Wes behind a striker.
Yeah, no complaints from me. I think I'd probably go with the same thing. Obviously, as Owen says, it's going to be a bit more of a headache once you've got Liam O'Neill and obviously Digby back in contention. But yeah, for the time being, that's pretty it, well. It pretty much picks itself, I think. You know, obviously assuming that they're all fit, and when they are, it's a strong midfield, and I think a lot of it. Still, I think from sort of earlier in the season, I still think a lot of our success is going to rely on if we can get Houlihan playing in his best position, which is just behind a striker, and if so, how much of the ball can we get him? And, if you've got Boateng and May sitting behind him, that's a pretty good supporting act as well. So, it's just really encouraging to see options, and, you know, there's options for different formations, there's different options for sort of personnel within formations, and, yeah, again, you know, when we talk about aspects like the midfield, it's again probably a good time to kind of reiterate what a huge amount of credit the club deserve for putting this team together. I think we touched on it a moment ago where we said, you know, the first 11 certainly is good enough to compete. I think we've probably got 16 players, maybe 17 players who can really, really do it at this level and really do it well at this level. I think beyond that, that's where we started to struggle, as we obviously talked about at the end of the first part. But I think with regards to midfield, to answer the question more directly, what these guys have said would be my first choice, and then it becomes a bit more of a headache once the other two guys are back.
That's bold. I would say we're more 13 players that can do it at this level. But I actually think the biggest headache won't be when the digger returns, because the digger's been brilliant. He comes straight back in. I think the biggest headache is what happens in January, because how's Boateng not getting in MK Don's first team at the moment? I have no idea. So yeah, that's the biggest headache. Like, how do we cope with his departure? You know, is the headache with Paul Barry realizing he's going to have to get his checkbook out and maybe make some sort of bid to sign him full time? That's the biggest headache for me, I think, with midfield, is what do we do in January when the boat is no longer available?
I think if I was Paul Barry, I'd absolutely be tapping up my new American mates for some dollars for Boateng. Definitely, he's been absolutely immense this year, hasn't he? For someone that didn't really. I think he was a little bit unfit when he first came here, wasn't he? And just hit the ground running. And he's been absolutely fantastic. Exemplified by setting up Dunk for the goal against Salford.
Vale, I think. Yeah, that move that just sort of went from one end of the pitch to the other. I think the brilliant thing about Boateng is just so effortless.
Yeah.
Everything he does, it doesn't seem to faze him. You know, he can win the ball back when he's got the ball. He can get past people. He can pick out a pass. I guess maybe the one area of the game you'd maybe look for a bit of an improvement is can he start contributing goals? But I don't think realistically that's ever something that he's done, and there's no real onus on him in this team at the moment to necessarily start doing that. But you know, if he can, then he almost becomes like the kind of complete midfielder for this level. If the option's there to buy him, then do it certainly. But I think the more realistic thing is that we maybe just try and keep him until the end of the season and kind of see what happens. But I think in terms of the midfield, he's probably the one that stands out to me as someone who is probably in the conversation for best midfielders in the league. And then, you know, even beyond that, you know, Wes Houlihan, we're talking about Paul Digby, players like that. And it's, just positive throughout the team, really. But Boateng, someone who kind of,
embodies
all that.
I mean, Boateng oozes class. He's just fantastic. And I just really enjoy the way that he sort of finds space for himself. And he's probably one of the best passers of the ball I've seen play for Cambridge for quite some time. But can we just take a moment to appreciate that last year our centre midfield contained the likes of Reggie Lamb and George Maris. And here we are with Boateng.
It's a chef kiss for people.
Let the viewers know
that I did a chef kiss when I, yeah.
It's incredible. It's incredible how much it's changed in sort of a year. We're talking about left backs. So we had Dan Jones this time last year. Like, what are we doing? What are we thinking with him? You know, going forward, we had Mark Richards, a 38-year-old Mark Richards. Mullin's already scored 13 goals this season.
Write off 38-year-olds though, mate.
Yeah, well, you know, Wes has still got plenty in the tank, but maybe if I'm being critical, maybe it shows that there was always the opportunity to put together a team like this on the sort of budget that we have, but that's a conversation for another day. But yeah, I think we can look back at last season and just see what an improvement it is, and I just hope it carries on going. And to be fair, we've talked about January a little bit. That's the only area of slight concern for me at the moment, is that we are going to have some of the top clubs in Europe coming in for some of our players, like Mullin, like Ironside. I'm sure they'd love a little stay in the new camp or the Bernabeu. But we'll see. All good at the moment, though.
We had this in our last promotion season, though, didn't we? Didn't Maxwell was only on a short-term loan, and the other lad, Apaya, was only on a short-term loan as well.
You're spot on. We did have it in our last promotion year, and it's interesting that you said that, because we had a question about our last promotion team come in on Twitter.
You've led it in absolutely lovely, George. Jono says, if you take our first choice 11 this season, who from our promotion winning side of 2014 would get in and who would lose their place?
That's really difficult. On current form,
Berry?
Well, yeah. Luke Berry or Wes Houlihan? Ooh. Tricky. I want to answer that question with another question. Are we talking about just like the squad that were there at the end that won the playoff final, or do we mean anyone in that squad that year? Because for me personally, if we're allowed anyone, Dimi Mitov loses his place to Chris Maxwell for sure.
Yeah.
I would also, well, Ian Miller was there at the end of the season. I say Ian Miller would get into this team. But other than that, it's a real struggle to see who else would get in.
Yeah, it's difficult. A Pyre and Elliot would get in the squad, I think, maybe at the expense of Nibs and Andy Dallas. You got to find room for Chadwick in there.
Owen turning on Andy Dallas. Oh.
I'm done with him. Yeah. I love that Andy Dallas was always fake news. It never happened.
Here's a question, Julian. Tom Champion or the Digger?
Tom Champion every day of the week. I can't believe it took so long.
On Barnes-Heimer or Mullin? What, scoring the last goal in a 7-2 rout against Hyde? Come on. What about the managers? There's one for you.
Oh,
Bonner.
Bonner's got all the potential, but
he's one of us.
He's one of us. He's got all the potential. Right. He's got a team playing really, really well. But you come on, Dickie Dosh got us promoted. He won the FA Trophy. It'd be money, I reckon.
It's really testament to the sort of podcast we are that we've just sat here talking for probably just more than an hour about a football team that are currently sat second in the league they're in. They're the top goal scorers in the league, one of the top goal scorers in Europe, across the country. We're already talking about swapping out the players and swapping out the manager with people that used to play for us like 7 or 8 years ago.
Boys, it's been an absolute privilege. I'm going to give you one big thank you because my internet's going to die if not. So thank you all very much, and we'll see you again soon.